I'm going to call to order a regular meeting for the Grover Beach City Council for Monday, April 18, 2016. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the brave men and women who give the sacrifice every day for our civil liberties? Thank you. Please remain standing. One of the best parts of our meetings is to get the local youth involved in our flag salute. And so tonight we have Lilia Fredlund. All right. Lilia, you Lilia?
Yes.
I was looking for you earlier. Thank you. So Lilia is 10 years old and a fifth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. She likes reading during school because she can enjoy stories with her classmates and teacher. She enjoys living near the Central Coast because she can go to the beach a lot more than if she lived in the middle of the state. I agree. Lilia would like to be a marine biologist or zoologist when she finishes her education. She says that she always has fun encounters with animals, such as the time she was face-to-face with a walrus. Wow. When she went to SeaWorld and faced to whiskers with a baby tiger and its mother at the zoo. She enjoys reading. She always looks forward to attending the Bright Futures program after school. I believe she's accompanied today with who's you want to introduce who's with you tonight, sweetie?
There's my mom, my Nana, my papa, my aunt, my dad, and my sisters are outside, and my teacher is over there.
Hi, Mr. Gonzalez.
So whenever you are ready.
Please stand, face the flag, right hand over your heart, and begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That was very well done. Why don't you come here? I have a certificate for you. Thank you so much for coming down.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you this. And this young lady's going to take our picture. Look at it. Very good. So that's for you, and here's some school supplies. So I appreciate going out there.
Thank you, Lily.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Nice job.
Thank you.
She's going to go for it.
Good work.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Too cool. Fantastic.
That was a hoot.
That was. That's a way to get us off to a really good start. Donna, when you're ready, roll call, please.
Here.
Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, will you cover our closed session announcements this evening?
With pleasure. Honorable Mayor, Council members, on three meetings, one on April 4th, one on April 8th, and one on April 9th, City Council held closed sessions regarding employment of the city manager. There were no approval actions taken in any of those closed sessions.
Okay, very good. Thank you. So we're going to move on to agenda review. This is where the council will review the agenda as presented by staff and see if we want to make any changes to the order of the agenda. Do any members of the council want to change the order of the agenda?
No.
Okay, seeing none. So want to make a motion?
So moved that we proceed with the agenda as posted.
Second.
Okay, very good. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. I believe there are extra agendas on the table at the back of the room, and we're going to go in the order as presented by staff. So now we're going to move into our ceremonial calendar. This is item number one, and this is a proclamation declaring April 29, 2016 as Arbor Day. Let's see. Donna, do we have anyone to accept this proclamation today, or is it the... Okay. So let me read this into the record.
This is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring April 29, 2016 as National Arbor Day, and it reads, whereas in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees, and whereas this special day, the last Friday in April, called National Arbor Day, was observed with the planting of more than a million trees in Nebraska, and whereas Arbor Day is observed throughout the nation and the world, and whereas trees can reduce the erosion of our precious topsoil from wind and water, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clear the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife, and whereas trees are a renewable resource giving us paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and countless other wood products, and whereas trees in our city increase property values, enhance the economic vitality of business areas, and beautify our community, and whereas Grover Beach has been recognized for the 31st year as a Tree City USA by the National Arbor Day Foundation and desires to continue its tree planting practices, and whereas the Grover Beach Parks and Recreation Department will conduct an Arbor Day ceremony and children's special event on Friday, April 29th at Fair Grove Elementary School from 3 to 5 p.m. to celebrate the importance of trees. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby officially proclaim April 29, 2016 as National Arbor Day in Grover Beach and urges all citizens to support efforts to care for our trees and woodlands and to support our community forestry program. Ms. Packer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. As the Mayor said, we are planning an after-school program Friday, April 29th at Fairgrove Elementary from 3 to 5 p.m., and it will be in conjunction with the San Luis Obispo County YMCA after-school program. We're expecting over 100 kids. We have several stations planned, including seed plantings, arts and crafts, all related to trees, and the Cal Poly logging team will be present again. They've been coming out for several years, and they will be teaching the kids about tree rings and the logging team activities. And we also have an obstacle course to wear them out. And it is open to the public. It's free, and please call the Parks and Recreation Department for more information, 473-4580. Thank you.
Thank you. Did you want to come and receive this?
Yes. That's okay.
Okay, we're good.
Okay.
So let's move on to item number two. This is recognition of Debbie Johnston for service on the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. And I know I saw her here. So, Debbie, why don't you come on up? And we just want to say thank you so much for the time that you've volunteered in our community to make it a much better place. We really appreciate that, and this is well-deserved. Do any other members on the council want to make comments before I walk down and give her a certificate?
Go ahead.
Barbara, why don't you go?
I really appreciate all you've done on our behalf. And I know that you also do the cross-riding guard at the school, and we really appreciate your dedication to service in the community.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks. I just wanted to reiterate that thank you as well, and I had the opportunity to serve on the Parks and Rec and Beautification Commission with Debbie, so I really, really enjoyed that time. Thank you.
We had a good time.
Karen?
We're just going to really miss you. Mm. You just always were a ray of sunshine, and I'm just sorry that you won't be here. Thanks.
Miriam, you have anything?
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, I think there are days I see you five times in a day because you volunteer everywhere I go. So thank you for this service and your service everywhere else in this city.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I enjoyed working with all of you. And I hope to be back in soon.
That's great. So do you mind? We're going to come around. We would love to take a photo with you.
Mayor, may I say a few words about Mrs. Johnston
first? Okay.
Oh, Maddie, she got her standing up here in the hot glare of the spotlight.
I just wanted to let the mayor and the city council and members of the audience to know how fortunate we were to have Debbie on our commission. She became involved when she opened her home to be part of the Spring Garden Tour several years ago. She then joined the commission and served her four-year term. Over the years, she volunteered numerous hours toward many projects with commissioners, including the Spring Garden Tour, Holiday of Lights Decorating Contest, the Carved Pumpkin Contest, Holiday Parade, and many more. She was instrumental in canvassing the city for beautification awards, contacting owners, and coordinating awards. She also leads Grover Heights School Youth Volunteer Cleanup at Grover Heights Park with Friday Night Live students. Debbie was very enthusiastic and helpful with the city's programs. Fortunately, she has offered to continue volunteering as on an on-needed basis, and we know where she lives.
Yes, we do.
Yes, yeah. All right, we're going to come around and join you. All right. Let's move on to public communications. This is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item within the jurisdiction of this council that is not on tonight's agenda. Please be aware that the council will listen to all communications. However, we cannot take action on any thing that's brought up in public communications because it is not on the agenda. Is there anyone that would like to address the council on public communications? Okay. Seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close public communications, bring it back to the council. Let's see. We're going to go into our public hearings. This is item number 3, if you are following along. And this is a reallocation of community development block grant funds. Mr. Buckingham, or Ms. Reese, are you giving, Ms. Reese is giving the report? Great, thank you.
Good evening. Good evening, Honorable Mayor, City Council. This Community Development Block Grant program authorizes the use of funds to eliminate blight and to assist low and moderate income residents. In 2014, the city received CDBG funds totaling $1.8 million, which includes $186,000 for housing acquisition projects for a multifamily site, which was intended to acquire a site that was approved for a 5-unit, a low-income project. However, subsequently, the state determined that the project was ineligible. The council has the option of reallocating the $186,000 to other eligible activities, but the funds must be expended by September 30th of this year unless an extension is granted by the state. On February 1st, the City Council expressed a preference to reallocate these funds for public service programs. As a result, staff received 3 proposals totaling $213,000 from the 5 Cities Homeless Coalition, Slow Housing Connection, and South County Family Educational and Cultural Center, also known as the Exploration Station. Public services funds can be distributed to one or more organizations using a subrecipient agreement with each organization. However, the maximum number of services provided among all the organizations cannot exceed 3. The 3 proposals are proposing 5 different activities. $7,000 of housing counseling services by the 5 Cities Homeless Coalition, $138,000 of eviction prevention services by both, or in total, by 5 Cities Homeless Coalition and Slow Housing Connection, $64,000 of rapid rehousing services by the Slow Housing Connection, and $1,200 for childcare and youth services by the Exploration Station, and $1,200 of transportation services by the Exploration Station. A detailed discussion for each service was provided in the staff report. Since only 3 services can be selected within the public services activity, all 5 service requests cannot be funded, and the city has the difficult task of determining which two services cannot be funded. In order to fund either of the 2 small funding requests, by the exploration station, the council would need to eliminate one of the other three services consisting of housing counseling, rapid rehousing, and eviction prevention. The council has the following alternatives to consider. One, reallocate the public services activity and fund three services consisting of eviction prevention, rapid rehousing, and housing counseling. Two, reallocate the public services activity and fund three services in different amounts or different public services. Number three is reallocate to another activity. Number four, disencumber the $186,000 or provide an alternate direction to staff. Staff is recommending that the $186,000 fund public service activities. This is supported by the council's work program goal to partner with the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and or other nonprofit organizations to assist them in providing services for the homeless. Therefore, staff is recommending that the City Council adopt the resolution to reallocate the funds from the Housing Acquisition Project to the public services activities and fund the three services consisting of eviction prevention, both to Five Cities Homeless Coalition and Slow Housing Connection for $74,000 and $40,000, respectively. Rapid rehousing for $64,700 to Slow Housing Connection, and housing counseling for $7,100 to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. This would not fund either service proposed by the exploration station, and it would also reduce the request by the Slow Housing Connection for eviction prevention services from their requested $64,000 to $40,000. That concludes staff's presentation. Our consultant, Paul Ashby from Adams Ashby Group, is in the audience and is available for questions in addition to staff.
Where's Mr. Ashby? Okay, just want to see who you are. Great. Any questions of staff? Karen?
I'm wondering who would be able to answer the questions about how these services fit into each of these categories. For example, I'm wondering if we couldn't lump some of these, like the housing counseling, into one of these other categories, so maybe we could be able to fund some, at least a portion of all of these requests.
Paul can address the question about combining the housing counseling services with the eviction prevention services or something. Rapid rehousing and eviction prevention services, they are two distinct items.
I can see that, but I'm just asking right. The question.
Right. Yeah, Paul will.
Okay.
Can address that.
Okay, Paul.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. Yeah, I think in reviewing this, and I just had a brief discussion with Five Cities, Jana here, about lumping those in. As long as the service is going to be offered to the same group, the same individual, family, then I think we have that opportunity. Eviction prevention does go towards someone who is possibly going to lose their home or their rent due to financial hardship. So, for instance, if those payments are going to be made for up to 3 months of rent and that housing counseling is a part of that, it's a program that they have to participate in, then I think we have the ability to combine those activities. Does that answer your question?
Yes. I believe that it does. And then I guess we will have to talk about if in fact that would be worthwhile for them.
Yeah, and again, in CDBG's mind, you're limited to these three public service activities, and so we just need to make sure that they're not standalone activities mm-hmm. is really what we're trying to do, because staff's going to have to put together three different sets of applications for these activities. So if they see it as, well, you can assist somebody with housing counseling that you may not assist with the eviction prevention, then they're going to see those as two services. But again, if it's a family that comes in, it's probably a good idea that they go through the housing counseling anyways if they're going to have the eviction prevention subsistence of payment.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Miriam, you have any questions?
A couple. I'm just looking at the end, the financial impact on the city. So no matter who these funds are allocated to, it's going to take approximately 100 hours of staff time?
That's what our estimate is currently, okay. Yeah.
Okay. And if you could just walk me through real quick, I'm looking at your recommendation, why you chose to allocate this way. Was there a certain reason?
Well, we're limited to three activities.
Right.
So for the amounts that were
yes.
requested.
So your final recommendation is eviction prevention, 114, rapid rehousing. So basically giving, slow connection, basically everything they've asked for, and funding the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, the counseling, and then it would just be a little bit less for the Five Cities eviction prevention.
It's a little bit less for Slow Housing Connection for their eviction prevention program.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's it. I got on the last page here. Yeah, my question was there a reason you had come down that way, or was it just kind of trying to...
I think in general we were trying to fund, first of all, the most services possible, and there may be a change because of this clarification that some of that management money could now go into eviction prevention. But, you know, we didn't do a real thorough analysis of the organizational capacity, but I think in some ways dividing up the money, we're also incentivized by we want them to spend this money. So, in essence, because Five Cities Homeless Coalition didn't submit for rapid rehousing, we funded all of Slow Housing's requests for that. And then because we had leftover monies after we funded Five Cities Homeless Coalition in eviction prevention, the balance of that money in order to use it went to Slow Housing Connection.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Barbara, you have any questions?
Actually, not at this time.
Okay. Jeff?
And I do, if we could bring Paul back up for a second. So it may be a multiple question here. The so if I'm hearing correctly, we can fund services. We can't fund organizations per se. Like,
correct.
I mean, obviously, we basically have three. We have five programs with three entities.
Yeah.
Okay.
The idea is that the funds are. I mean, these need to be going to low and moderate income groups, 80% below the county median income, and that's really who the end user needs to be. These organizations will have to report that to the city, because the city is still the lead agency on this grant, and they'll ultimately need to report that. So as long as the public service that's being offered, if that counseling, again, is with that type of payment assistance, if it's all grouped together for that specific program, then I think we're going to be okay. The idea is not to just fund overhead staff to perform the duties, unless it's an integral part of it.
So going towards that thought, if we are able to take the housing counseling and combining it with the eviction prevention for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, I'll caveat right now, mm-hmm. I am on the board of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. When this came before our last meeting, I did recuse myself so that I could participate in tonight's discussion. So back on track here. So if we are able to combine the eviction prevention and the housing counseling, is there a possibility of also combining, say, the rapid rehousing and eviction prevention into realizing that eviction prevention and rapid rehousing are slightly different, obviously?
Yeah, we wouldn't be able to combine those. The rapid rehousing would have to specifically go for security deposits only for people who are trying to get into housing. It can't involve any rent payments.
Okay.
The eviction prevention would have to be for folks that are already in housing, and we're going to give them 90 days of subsistence. because they've had a financial hardship. So they're distinct different programs to CDBG. So unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to combine those.
Okay, so then kind of a third thought then. And so if we've got eviction prevention, housing counseling, we've got eviction prevention, which is still a kind of a quasi same category, and then our second category would be rapid rehousing. So then if we had a third category, we have the South County Family Educational and Cultural Center coming forward with $2,500. Could we lump those two together as transportation for child care and youth services?
Well, they're distinctly shown as two different public services when you get into activity pages, unless, for instance, this – and I haven't had that conversation with the Exploration Station, but if the transportation was going to the same families to get them on a scholarship program, it's something we could look at. I still believe that they're separate activities, though. One of them is a scholarship based on their income and providing a camp to them, and another one may be a field trip. At least the way that it was explained to me in the proposals, you know, if a field trip's coming from a school, they would pay, reimburse some of the bus costs, depending on how many ex-children were on a free lunch program or a low to moderate income group. When you said eviction program, we would still keep that as one, that housing counseling. We wouldn't even put the slash on it. We would just call it all eviction prevention. That might be a component of the program, rapid rehousing. And in my mind, then it would be one of those for Exploration Stations, not both.
Okay, great. So then my last question for the moment is if we realize we have $186,000 and change to earmark for this evening, so can we, and realizing the way staff has brought forward the recommendation, slow housing connection isn't completely funded. If we allocated funding for either the child care and youth services or transportation, we obviously would need to reallocate some of those other funding as well, because we can't go over the 186.
Correct.
Okay. Great. Just wanted to confirm.
Yes.
Okay. So then I want to maybe staff, and you can answer, were there any other general criteria other than someone submitted a proposal and we said that sounds good? I'm just kind of curious. And I think Jeff kind of asked us, how did you land on your recommendation? Was there any criteria?
They are the only proposals we did receive.
Okay.
We did have to kind of go through scrutinizing them and give them some feedback to make sure they could morph the program into one that would qualify. So that was what the work that we did. As we mentioned, I mean, we got about $213,000 total in requests, and we have $186,000. So, I mean, for a change when it comes to CDBG public services, if you can recall when we were entitlement, you know, we can fund a lion's share of the request. So.
Okay. And then how do we ensure that these programs will be in Grover Beach? I mean, so is there going to be a way for us to monitor this?
Sure. So the idea with these programs is that you'll have to enter into a subrecipient agreement with each of these organizations. That'll be a requirement of CDBG, and it's in the best interest of the city because you're really the pass-through agency on their behalf. Mm-hmm. The way that you verify that is first with your subrecipient agreement and making sure that that process is in place and staff is aware of that. You'll want to do a training with each organization on what their requirements will be. To give an example, when they make a payment on behalf of somebody, let's say to to eviction prevention, it would go directly towards the apartment complex. It doesn't go to the family. The organization would pay that, and they would request reimbursement from the city. So the city will need to see that status report. They can review the files at any time. In the subrecipient agreement, it'll be laid out. It must be residents of Grover Beach. They must be 80% or below the county median income. Those are all absolutes to CDBG. Otherwise, it constitutes payback. So that's where that agreement comes into play, and that's where the city and myself assisting them do their due diligence before anything gets approved to pay that reimbursement request. It's never an advance. It's always a reimbursement process with CDBG.
Very good. And again, adding on to what Mayor Pro Tem was, the questions he was asking regarding trying to consolidate programs and whatnot. So I just want to know, do we have latitude with respect to, they've requested a certain amount. Can we, does the council have the ability to reduce that amount tonight?
How much they want to do
tonight?
How
much they want for each program?
Yeah, that's one of your options. Yeah,
okay.
And you can divvy that money out. None of these have gone. I mean, we're waiting to get direction from the council before this actually goes to the state. This is, you know, once we get that resolution, then we actually will make that request to the state. So nothing's been submitted to them yet. They'll need to amend your standard agreement that you currently have with them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Could I ask one question based on something? Just also to declare, as Jeff did, I'm on the board for the Exploration Station, yeah, the Cultural Center, and we never discuss this at a board meeting, and if we ever do, I will recuse myself there. So I just want to ask your criterion with people being Grover Beach residents. I know particularly slow housing connection houses people who have no residence. So is that how will they verify that they're Grover Beach residents?
Well, if it's going to be eviction prevention, well, let's talk about which program, I guess. So if it's eviction prevention, they would need to be in the city limits wherever they're residing. That's the payment you're making, the organization is making for them, again, up to 90 days. So that would have to be their physical address. And on the rapid rehousing, if we're doing a security deposit, again, that unit would have to be within the city limits of Grover Beach.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Can I ask a quick follow-up towards that?
Sure.
Okay. So if the residence is in Grover Beach, but if they're being relocated from outside the city limits, is that still acceptable?
Well, what program are we referring to?
I'm sorry. That would be specifically referring to the rapid rehousing.
So the rapid rehousing. So if they're going to be moving into the city, mm-hmm, you're saying, from another area?
Correct.
Correct. So, yeah, again, it's going to be, they're becoming a resident of Grover Beach.
Okay,
at that point, that's the physical address that,
gotcha,
you care about.
Okay, so they don't necessarily have to originate if it's the rapid rehousing.
Could be somebody that had just moved here, yeah, okay, or is looking, and they could be looking to reestablish themselves here. Correct. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Could I ask him another hypothetical?
It's
sorry.
It's okay. A little bit. Yeah.
Hold on.
I was just going to give him another example.
Go ahead. Okay.
A little bit like your first-time home buyer program. Same idea. You may have somebody that applies and moves from another residence to the city of Grover Beach, and that's really what matters, is it becomes their principal place of residency within the city limits.
Okay. Mary?
As you know, we have such a tight housing market here. I mean, what if somebody is homeless here in Grover Beach, perhaps living in a creek bed at this point, but the only place they can find housing is an apartment in Pismo Beach or Rio Grande? How does that work?
Well, both of the programs that are being presented right now, rapid rehousing and eviction prevention, would not address that individual, unfortunately.
Okay.
Again, these programs are not paying somebody's rent. The only payment that we're making for somebody that doesn't have housing already would just be that security deposit, that down payment.
Okay. Thank
the
you.
Place they yeah. move, but the place they move into needs to be located in Grover Beach.
Must be. Okay. Thank you.
And I would assume that the organization that may be doing the rapid rehousing, it's going to be part of their vetting process to ensure that if they're going to pay a security deposit on behalf of an individual, that they have some type of income that they're able to actually afford the rent, then moving forward, rather than paying a security deposit and the person may be out of the home within 2 months or something like that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to open this up to the public. I do have one speaker request form, and that's from Jana Nichols. Jana?
Mayor Scholes, Council, it's a pleasure to be with you tonight. I just wanted to thank you for your consideration tonight and the city's willingness to consider out-of-the-box uses for these CBDG funds. I will tell you we were somewhat challenged by submitting a proposal, not only because of the timeline, but also because of the restrictions for the funds. And I appreciate staff's involvement and certainly your consultant's involvement in trying to help us clarify exactly what we could and couldn't do with the funds. And we, in fact, asked very many of the same questions that you asked this evening. Very briefly, what I'd like to talk about is the fact that the cost of getting people into housing is far greater than helping people stay in housing. We have seen tremendous increases in rents in the last year. We're seeing a number of people being displaced because properties are being renovated and they're not able to return to that unit because of the affordability factor once in. So from our perspective, we very much specifically focused on eviction prevention, one, because it's a niche for which there isn't funding currently available, and we have a number of other pieces that we can assist with in terms of trying to get people into housing. But I will tell you, and I think I mentioned this to you a few weeks ago, we are being overrun with eviction prevention requests this year, and we have little to no funding available. Obviously, this funding very specifically will serve the residents of Grover Beach. We also have an agency embedded with us, The Link. They have the current county ESG funding that meets the same requirements, with the exception of the fact that they cannot serve your residents because you are not in the urban county. And so by virtue of being able to add this to that piece, we'll be able to facilitate some eviction prevention that we haven't been able to do. In putting together a proposal, we did do a benchmark based on how many folks we thought we could serve before the end of September, based on the number of requests that the Link is seeing now that they're not able to fund, and they're coming to the coalition. I mean, obviously, we're co-located in the same office. So, you know, this is a piece for which we don't currently have funding. So, again, I appreciate your support and consideration. We're open to amending however we need to best make it work for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. Is there anyone else that would like to discuss, come and speak on the item before the council tonight? I don't have a speaker request form, but you can still come up. Okay. I think we have a mic for you, Shannon. Yeah, you're good.
Hi, Deb Gieslin, Exploration Station. I think all three of the different organizations that applied are all important. I think what our element brings is when those kids get in housing, they're going to need some place to go. We can provide that for those kids. We need to keep them off the streets. We need to keep them busy. And we need to introduce them to science and technology. And I think our organization can do that. And we're not asking for a whole lot of money. We're just asking for enough to help those kids get into a camp. As you all probably remember, there was a tragic event that happened at the Exploration Station, and we're rebuilding. And so it's really important to get those kids back into that location, keep them busy, and keep them off the streets. And so I think what we're asking for can be squeezed in. Thank you.
Thank you. Sharon?
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. I am looking at Attachment 3 in the packet, and it is from the Slow Housing Connection. And I'm reading a sentence: we currently have no paid staff. We are seeking $129,400 to be distributed as follows, and then they go into the detail. My concern is, with no paid staff, how can we be assured that they can deliver what they are saying?
Very good question. Ms. Torres, would you like to come up?
Dee Torres, and I'm the director of Slow Housing Connection. And that is true. Currently, we do not have any paid staff. We have been operating for over 2 years, full volunteer basis, countywide. We've housed over 50 homeless individuals throughout the county, and we've done eviction prevention on our own and through working with partner organizations for hundreds. And we have a wide volunteer base. If we are to receive this funding, part of the funding will be to have our first paid staff. So that staff person will be solely responsible to focus all of their attention 40 hours a week here in Grover Beach, administering these funds, and also for eviction prevention, rapid rehousing, and also filling in the gaps because we do much more than just place people into apartments or help them stay in their apartment. We take a holistic approach. We wrap supportive services around those individuals so that they maintain that housing. Every single person that we've housed so far is still housed. And we work with the kids, even the things like the exploration station. While Deb was speaking, I thought of how that is also something that we do. There's a fund called the Dambly Fund. We helped to create that several years ago, and that is a fund specifically for low-income and homeless children to pay for kids' camps and things like that. I actually helped develop that several years ago. There is still thousands of dollars in that fund, and we use that on a regular basis so that our kids do things like swim lessons, surf camp, pay for their high school registration gowns and things like that. So we partner with every other organization in the community to bring all the resources, so it's much more than eviction prevention or rapid rehousing. I hope, and I'm here for any questions. I know that our application was pretty extensive, so I didn't want to take a lot of your time, but I'm here to answer any question that you might have.
Very good, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to address the item before the council? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me close it to the public, bring it back to the council. So,
I do have one question.
Okay, Barbara, you have the floor.
Regarding the exploration station, one of the bigger budget amounts was for busing the children. Do the elementary schools require busing the children from schools 5 blocks away and 3 blocks away if they have a field trip to the station?
You can come on up, Deb.
A lot of times they will walk if the weather is very nice or the kids are a little bit older, but a lot of times for the younger kids, they, you know, in the rainy weather, they need busing. So, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Let's have some discussion. So, who wants to start?
This is a very hard decision to make.
well, let me, I'll just start. Let me do this. These are all very good proposals, and thank you for submitting. Quite honestly, I know that we had talked about trying to do something with respect to a shelter. So I'm not sure whether it's a day center or whatnot, but I guess the time constraints means that we would not be able to move that forward, right? So I think we should look at eviction prevention, rapid rehousing, and Jeff, I like the direction you're going to see how we can combine them and figure out what that number is. I do want to say that I am a big supporter of the South County Exploration Station, or the Education and Cultural Center. We go back and forth on the names and whatnot. And I would like to see if we can find a way to help fund this program, because this, we know, is in the heart of our city. We've worked with them for many, many, many years. I actually worked with them before I was even elected. And so I think we know it's a known commodity, and whatever we can do to get funding to them, I think would be helpful. And so I had some initial thoughts of do we increase the amount to the $6,047 and then split the remaining funds between the other two organizations and have them modify the programs. So it's just a thought. I want to throw that out there for some discussion. Miriam, go.
Okay. I would agree. I think, I'd agree to some extent. I would definitely want to fund at least one of the South County Family Educational and Cultural Center requests, because it doesn't sound like we can do both. I might lean toward, just because of the timeline, funding the summer camps, because we're going into summer, and it might be harder to fund the busing with us heading into summer for school field trips. So maybe the summer camps aspect. And then as far as divvying up the rest of the money, I would probably give the SLO Housing Connection the entire amount that they've asked for, just because they've only in the past had $50,000 and housed 50 people with it, which is really impressive. And they also reach a population that's often labeled unreachable. And with that kind of, in my mind, directly fits with the unfortunate issue we've had to deal with of clearing encampments this year. And I really want to directly reach those individuals who are in our town, and that seems to be the group that specializes in that area. And then, of course, and then I would just like to give the rest to Five Cities Homeless Coalition in whatever capacity everyone sees fit. So that's it.
Okay. Well, so let me just add, let me ask you a question, because I think in the proposal that Deb talked about, I think they only talked about 10, paying for 10 children to attend that session, and I think we should increase that number. So I think we need to figure out a higher number if this is the direction where the council wants to go, but let's see what everyone else thinks. Karen?
Don't you think $1,000 per child is pretty high?
Well, it's actually 100 per child, I believe, and they had 10 children.
If there are, if I guess the question
is
if there are, enough children out there to take advantage of those funds by September.
Right.
So if they think that they have enough, because those funds have to be expended in that manner by September, otherwise they go away. So we need to make sure that these, you know, that the funds can be expended. So I guess that's the question. And I too, that was why I asked originally if we could combine that the counseling with the another one of these programs so that we could have the three different services. So
I agree with that.
And Marion makes an excellent point. When I went through all the applications, I am so impressed with the housing those 50 folks. It's just amazing how that's happened, and then the fact that they're still housed, that's just amazing to me. Not that both organizations do an excellent job. I mean, I'm so impressed and so thankful for what you do. So I would certainly be agreeable to your proposal there. And so once we hear from our exploration station about what they're thinking for their program, then I think we can go from there.
So let me ask, I mean, could you accommodate more than 10 children if you had the funding?
I believe I could.
It's not hard to get kids to say yes to come to something that they qualify for.
And I would think if you look at the enrollment at Grover Beach Elementary, Grover Heights, and some of the other schools, it would be pretty easy.
Yeah, I could certainly do that.
Thank you, Deb.
So is that something that we can do? I mean, if it hasn't been applied for, we're good?
Yep. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Barbara, you have?
I'm just thinking about how can we guarantee how many kids are going to be looking for scholarship at camp as far as putting money aside beforehand for it?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, what guarantee can we have as far as the number of children that need scholarships for camp to put the money aside now and doesn't have to be spent until September?
YMCA, I can coordinate with YMCA, the elementary schools, and any kids in the community. We have parents coming through all the time asking me if there are scholarships available. I have a really small fund that's for something else, and so our robotics camp is the most popular, and that's the one that, you know, most of the kids want to come to, that and our Makers Club. I don't think anybody can guarantee anything in this planet, but I can certainly give it my best shot to get it used up. I don't think it's going to be an issue.
It's a tough issue because this is the first full summer after the restart, so it's pretty hard to, you can't give me an average of how many kids are enrolled in your camps.
Probably right now we have about 15.
About 15 regulars? Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Lee.
I have a slightly different thought, and I agree with everything that's been said, but I'm wondering if we go in a slightly different direction, and this may require a question from Paul. So if we're about to fund, let's say, three programs, we have eviction prevention, we have rapid rehousing, and we have, I'll call it other, I'll call it the exploration station. Let's say we go down the approach of $6,047 for the exploration station, fund that program with that, and then we say to the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and the Slow Housing Connection group, we have $180,000 left.
Okay.
Go spend it.
I think that's kind of what I was trying to.
Right. So, exactly where you're going is, mm-hmm. without telling either one of them that they have X number of dollars, this is what we have to spend. If Five Cities Homeless Coalition can spend $180,000 between now and September, as long as there's coordination between the city staff that they don't duplicate or they don't go over together, it's basically a first come, first serve.
Oh.
Can we do that?
Paul?
So, and I think I understand the question, Councilmember Lee. We're going to need to, when we apply after this meeting or the next one, whenever that resolution gets generated, we're going to have to submit activity application pages for each of these public services with a dollar amount tied to each, as well as a draft subrecipient agreement. In my opinion, it's in the city's best interest to have those subrecipient agreements match whatever that dollar amount is so that you're not going to exceed that, especially to the state's mind.
So towards that end, let's say we allocate $90,000 to each organization. However, let's say Five Cities Homeless Coalition is able to spend theirs faster than the Slow Housing Connection for whatever reason. And we can we then change allocation if let's say some of the programs in the coalition take off quicker or if some of the programs in the Slow Housing Connection take off quicker.
Yeah, so let me back up a little bit even more than so when we apply, let's just for the sake of it, so these are all HUD codes 05 and then they have a letter at the end of it, and there's probably 30 examples that they give you. So let's just say eviction program is 05A and rapid rehousing is 05B. Okay. So each of those activity codes we're going to need to put some sort of dollar amount to that. Just like anything else that you apply for with the state, if you do need to transfer funds between programs, it does happen. You have to make that request, and they have to amend your contract. If you had both of them, you know, underneath the same subrecipient agreement, could you change the amount that you wanted to give to each depending on how they were performing? Yeah, possibly, yeah. Because for the most, for the councils, you know, what you're determining here is what activities you're putting these money towards, not necessarily...
Right.
Who is implementing it? That's the subrecipient agreement. So the activity is not changing in the state's mind. It's still 05A, and if $50,000 gets spent, that may be. I discussed this a little bit with city staff about possibly having that option of amending the subrecipient agreement, and that's what it is in place for. Perhaps if you had a performance clause in there by X amount, it's reviewed. And if one organization is far exceeding it, then there probably isn't a reason to keep it in one other if they're both accomplishing the same goal.
Okay. Yeah. So that sounded like we could consider that. If I
consider what? You threw a couple of theoreticals out there.
Yeah. So towards the it sounds like we would need to establish a dollar amount for the activity.
Okay.
So which would then go to the subrecipient agreement. With the caveat on my part of effectively performance based. So if staff needed to come back at a later date before September 1st, based upon that. I mean it's the organizations are both worthy. I don't want to do anything but a friendly competition between them because it's going to be doing the homeless of our community or those in jeopardy the most good.
So let me jump back in here as someone who's not only the board and trying to look at this from a purely standpoint of what's going to work and what are we going to have the most success in accomplishing. And I know Slow Housing Connection put together a good proposal, but I know they've got 2 years as a track record in five cities. Homeless has been in place for several years. We even refer to them in our general plan goals. So I want to just make sure that we are being fair in this deliberations and directing funds to those organizations that do have a history that we can point to. So perhaps what we should do is, it looks like they both do the eviction prevention program, so maybe that's 120, and then with the rapid rehousing it's 60, and then I think with 6,047, and I'd like to call it unserved youth scholarships, because I mean there are folks out in our community, and I think Deb's right on the money. I mean, education and getting them educated early, whether it's science, technology, engineering, and math, is a huge, there's a huge gap in the society. So I want to make sure that we can give them money and give them an opportunity to succeed. I could easily see them advertising this program, sending it to the schools, getting kids on the list, and you could technically say, you know, we have a commitment to do 15 or 20 kids or whatever the number works out to be.
So could you clarify what numbers you're talking for each group, just so I understand?
Well, based on Paul's advice, it's not for a group. It's really putting the money into the activity areas.
Activity.
So I guess that's just going to have to be a discussion of how does that break out into
subcontracts. Yeah, and I'll give one caveat since I keep coming up here. Again, we're going to be applying for one, you know, the pot of money for one specific activity. Okay. Rarely do you see two subrecipients in place for the same activity pot of money. I do want to say that. Just as a caveat, we've broached it with your CDBG rep, and he said, yeah, it might be scrutinized a little bit more depending on who they're serving. Are they catching a different demographic, a different group? Are they going after the same type? So, you know, typically if you have a shelter program, it's one subrecipient who's running that shelter. So this is a little bit different of a situation. I do want to make that point known. And it has been addressed to your CDBG rep. And I think it'll be more scrutinized once that full application actually goes into them.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Karen.
So what do you mean it'll be more scrutinized? You mean that the funds may not be allocated, or
they may just question it on why it needs to go to both organizations.
So towards that end, if I can jump in. So yeah. If we use the three categories of eviction prevention, rapid rehousing, and underserved youth. So let's say if we did the $120,000 to eviction services, we might say Five Cities Homeless Coalition, you're the lead on that one. Rapid rehousing, Slow Housing Connection, you're the lead on that one. So would that be the direction that you would recommend from there, even though we're funding programs, we're also funding a provider for that particular program?
I think from the state's perspective, I think that's the cleanest way
to
do it.
But you've got an organization that has clearly said that's what they think they can do.
And I didn't say there wasn't going to be challenges in how we earmark that. But, yeah, but we've got $138,000 in eviction prevention, so that's been asked for. So if we go to the $120,000, then we've gone over both of their requests. So maybe we don't go that high with that. Maybe I'm making that more difficult than it is.
I mean, I think there's two different populations. So I think there's clearly a reason why we've got this going on. But I don't know.
So maybe the question becomes: is if we did those three programs, how would you allocate the funding? So John kind of threw out a number of, based upon kind of somewhat in the ballpark of where these numbers were starting from.
I think there's an obvious reason why we've got two organizations that have basically said this is what they think they can do by September. You know, it's not an easy population to reach. So that's a lot of legwork. A lot of people to reach and not an easy population to reach. So I guess I don't really understand what the difficulty is as far as having two separate organizations trying to reach this population, and what the how this is going to be a difficult issue with the state.
Yeah, and I think from their standpoint, it's just a matter of two organizations that are trying to accomplish the same goal, and is there really a difference? What's stopping us from having multiple organizations always doing the same thing? I think that we can move forward with it the way that the city would like to. Mm-hmm. That's when the state is going to vet it during the application stage. And I spoke with city staff about this, that we'll just put together both draft agreements and let's see if they have any issue with it. Because it is a lot of money to spend in 4 months, and I'm in agreement that the more people working on it, the faster we can get it out. And eviction prevention is, you know, one of the fastest ways to do that, because you're talking about multiple months, possibly of payments.
So I would say if you look at page 4 of our staff report, the numbers I drew out are not very far off from what was in the staff report, because it had for eviction prevention $114,207, and then it had the rapid rehousing at $64,700. So I think we're pretty close to that, and I think, Karen, you raised a good point about can they combine counseling into that. And then that's what leaves the $6,047 for the underserved youth scholarships to get them in for science, technology, engineering, and math. And I think the way, Jeff, you talked about making each one a lead, I think does make sense. It kind of hopefully gets them to work together, especially on the eviction prevention. I think the only one who had talked about the rapid rehousing was Slow Housing Connection. So if they were the lead on that, I think it makes sense.
So, and actually, before Paul goes too far away, one more question. I apologize. So, with what we've outlined here, what would the delay be in getting the money actually on the ground with the applications? Obviously, if the state has to interpret something,
how quickly?
And then obviously, we've got a September deadline looming.
So we discussed this tonight as well. Staff, we'll prepare the application activity pages. I'll assist staff where I can as fast as we can. I think we already have pretty much all the information because we've vetted them pretty thoroughly. We went through a few different processes. We developed our own template of an application based on what the state's going to ask them. So I would think within a week, those should be submitted along with this resolution. Okay. I can't speak for the state. They are not the fastest moving wheel. but we will.
There's an understatement.
We'll apply pressure as fast as we can. But how it's going to work is they will get it. They will have to review it. And if they approve it, then they will need to amend your contract, which means that contract goes to their contract division. And that can take some time. But if we know that it's going to be approved, that's when staff starts working on the items that we know we're going to have in place, i.e. things like the subrecipient agreement. We start drafting those just to get them ready. So I would think by next week those are submitted to them, and I just can't speak for them. I'm hoping that within a week or two we hear thumbs up, thumbs down, and it's moving forward. I don't think you're going to have your amendment then to your contract just because that typically takes a while to generate. But I think that you'll at least know and staff will be able to move forward with at least preparing those documents to get the programs rolling out.
Okay, yeah, and that's obviously the most important thing is getting the programs.
Yeah, and unfortunately the organizations, we can't incur any costs until we get that official approval, not the verbal approval, not the email. It needs to come from the contracts. And at that point, then those costs will be eligible for reimbursement.
Okay.
I wish it was quicker.
It's the state, we understand. So someone want to try a motion?
So I'll throw out a motion and see where it goes. So I will make a motion. Let's see if I can get to the right line here. I'll make a motion that we receive the report, consider public input, and adopt the resolution to reallocate the $186,047 from the housing acquisition to the public services activity and fund three services consisting of eviction prevention for $120,000, rapid rehousing for $60,000, and underserved youth for $6,047.
Okay. Anyone?
$6,047. So, which allocates the entire $186,047.
Okay, I'll second that. Any additional discussion on the motion?
Yes. We're talking eviction prevention.
Mm-hmm.
And so now how are we splitting that up? Five Cities Homeless Coalition is going, are we splitting it 60-60?
Do we need to get into that level?
Well, I think we do.
Okay.
So we not?
Yeah, so one option that we were just discussing over there is, at least for the resolution, you just need to actually put it to a program service. In the subrecipient agreement, we're going to want to lay out what that dollar amount is, just so that they're both aware of what the funds are and that they don't exceed it.
Okay. So if we pass this motion or consider this motion and have further direction after that?
Yeah, that is exactly right. So,
okay.
Legal counsel, you have something?
Just to the extent that the question went to the clarification of the amounts that were being proposed in the resolution, maybe that question should be answered first before the vote is taken on the resolution.
Okay. So perhaps it would be 90,000 to Five Cities Homeless and 30,000 to slow housing, because they're going to get the entire 60,000 for rapid rehousing. So that breaks it.
However, Ms. Nichols, she indicated that that's what they had indicated she thought they could. That's what she thought that they could expend up until September. So
okay.
I don't understand why we'd give her more. I mean,
yeah. Maybe 90 to eviction prevention to Five Cities Homeless, it may be more than their organization can handle. So 60-60 would be within what people have asked for, which means that they could utilize it.
So towards that end, do we go 80,000 for eviction prevention to Five Cities Homeless, because that combines their 74 and their 7 to get to their housing counseling and eviction prevention? So then we have, what's that, 40,000 to slow housing connection for eviction prevention, and then 60 under rapid rehousing under slow housing connection?
If that's not going to make an already complicated situation for even worse,
I mean,
they'll figure
given
it out.
The timeline.
If you want to give her,
we've been going.
I say we'll give Five Cities Homeless the 74,000 that they've asked for.
Oh, but they've asked for 81. So if they
add, when you,
if,
the
when
two.
You combine the
oh,
housing council.
Oh, and combine the two. Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Very good.
So was that an amendment to your motion?
If so moved, I would say with an amendment to, yes, 80,000 to Five Cities Homeless Coalition for eviction prevention. So, and what's that, 40,000 to slow housing connection for eviction prevention, and 60,000 to slow housing for rapid rehousing. And then 6,047 to exploration station for underserved youth.
The second does agree with that
Thank
amendment.
You.
Okay, Barbara, I see you.
I lost track of it. Who's getting what?
Staff, have you taken notes? Could you read that back, please?
So under eviction prevention, we would have $120,000 for the service. $80,000 would be allocated to Five Cities Homeless Coalition, $40,000 to slow housing connection. Under the second service of rapid rehousing, $60,000 would be all to slow housing connection, and the third service would be youth services, and that would be $6,047 for the exploration station.
Thank Very you. Good.
Everyone, is everyone clear? And so
yes.
We are going to be voting on this resolution. Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, second by myself. Donna, roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Motion carries. Why don't we take a 7-minute break? We'll see you back at 7:45.
Thank you.
We're going to reconvene the Grover Beach City Council meeting on Monday, April 18, 2016. I believe when we ended, we had just concluded item number three. We are going to move into our consent agenda, and there are several items on consent. These are routine items that we typically take as a group. Do any members of the council want to pull any items from consent?
Don't need to pull any. I do have a comment on, okay, on 6 and 8 and 9.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. No questions? What are your comments?
Comment on, maybe it's a question on number, is it 5 or 6? Bear with me as I find my question. So, the comment was, I wanted to say, as part of our meeting last week where we were talking about Newport and Long Branch, there was some discussion with regards to private improvements, and I wanted to say thank you first to staff for putting the deposits from people who are utilizing those private improvements. It's exactly what we were talking about last week, so people are taking advantage of that. And then for number 8 and number 9, I don't have all the names in front of me, but I wanted to thank both the citizens, the Street Bond Citizen Oversight Committee and the Sales Tax Citizen Oversight Committee for the work that they did on both of those reports.
Okay, very good. Okay. Does anyone from the community want to speak to any item on consent? So, Sharon?
Sharon Brown, Grover Beach. Yes, mine is in regard to item 10 on consent regarding the goals and work program. By the way, I think it's an excellent, excellent job that staff did and that you have done in revising and updating our goals. But there was one thing that kind of made me wonder. I know that council approved the use of or possible use of public buildings for emergency warming shelters, and I didn't see anything in here about even a possible exploration of that item, and I'm wondering if it should be included.
Great, thank you. City Manager.
Mr. Mayor and Council and Ms. Brown, thank you for that. The Council did approve an emergency crisis resolution. However, at the time, no city facilities have been identified, so that's reason why it's probably not in the goals, although staff has been had a number of discussions since then with groups, and we will be working at that in the future, but it's not part of the goals as far as a specific goal for staff.
Okay, I think she's asking the question of why is it not on the goals, and we're going to explore it. So, anything from the council?
So, would it not fall into the community development and housing program where it says partner with Five Cities Homeless Coalition and other nonprofit organizations to assist them in providing services for the homeless? I know it's kind of a global statement, but with the declaration of the crisis. It could fit into that location if needed, if we did have that issue arise about a location.
Okay, that would be under this on the sixth arrow under goal 5, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Or part of that sixth arrow, I should
part
say.
Part of the sixth arrow, correct?
Okay, so I think we'll just staff can make duly note that, and I think we're covered. Okay. So at this point, we are not going to pull any items from consent, so someone prepared to make a motion.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion and a second on the consent agenda. If there's no additional discussion, we got all these on voice votes. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay. Let's move on to regular business, and this is item number 11. This is the San Luis Obispo Council of Government Self-Help Transportation Funding Initiative. Interim City Manager Copsey, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the Council. The San Luis Obispo Council of Governance, otherwise known as SLOCOG, is an association of local governance from the seven cities and a county. It has a 12-member board, and including one member from our city council. and all the other cities, as well as the Board of Supervisors. SLOCOG's prime responsibilities include transportation planning and funding for the entire county region. SLOCOG is responsible for coordinating various traffic road projects, programming transportation programs, and such for the county. In the past 6 months, SLOCOG has staff has engaged the public to garner information get feedback for the level of support for a half-cent sales tax measure. At their April 8th meeting, SLOCOG board approved to move forward, a 10-to-1 vote, to look at and continue to look at a half-cent regional sales tax that will generate about $25 million for the county solely for transportation purposes. In just a minute, I'll turn this over to SLOCOG representatives. Tonight we have Ron DeCarli from SLOCOG, Stephanie Hicks is their PIO, and then their consultant who will be presenting the information will be Kendall Flint. So SLOCOG will be looking for the City Council to, as a recommended action, to review and comment on the draft transportation plan, to identify possibly some key projects for local funding allocation, and three, to provide direction for staff to work with SLOCOG to develop a final transportation investment plan. And with that, I would like to turn it over to Kendall or Ron, whoever wants to go first, and let them take away the show.
Okay, Mr. DeCarli.
Thank you, Mayor Scholes, members of the council. It's a real pleasure to be here today, kind of give you a real update on what we've been working on in the last, really, year or so. As your staff has mentioned, Ava gave a very good brief introduction about what our agency does. I want to bring it down a little more specifics in the Grover Beach. It's been our agency working with you and your staff that's funded the train station, the transit center, Grand Avenue streetscapes. More recently, we have funding now to expand the train station and now also to rebuild Oak Park Road. So those are as well as just rehab some of your major streets throughout the region, 4th Street's another key project. Those are the kinds of projects we've been doing throughout the region, including major interchange improvements and freeway improvements. With state and federal funding, we've had a significant problem. The funding is basically going away. So our board has asked us to investigate options, do a pretty significant public outreach. We've hired Regional Governmental Services. Kendall Smith is going to be Flint is going to be doing a presentation. It kind of gives you a background of what we've been doing, conclusions we've come up to, the recommendations we're making. So with that, Kendall.
Thank you, Ron. Make sure I've got on. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Again, I'm Kendall Flint. I've been working with SLOCOG for several months now, and what we're going to do tonight is basically walk you through the proposed expenditure plan allocations and kind of talk a little bit about how it was developed and what it actually means. As Ron mentioned, funding in California for transportation is going down, and it's happening for a number of reasons, the most significant of which is the actual gas tax has not been adjusted for inflation since 1993, has gone down just by the percentages, and with the emergence of fuel-efficient vehicles, we're just seeing less people spending money on gas. Now, the state right now is currently exploring an alternative to gas tax, which would be vehicle miles traveled. You may have heard about that, putting a little device in the car. The lawsuits are lining up now. So that's going to be some time before that's resolved. In addition, I think it's really important to note that both SLOCOG as well as the member agencies here in this county, as well as all of the other 56 counties in the state of California, have been lobbying our legislatures to come up with an alternative transportation funding program for local streets and roads, and Sacramento has steadfastly refused. And at this point, there are three separate bills that are going through at this time. They still do not bring us back up to any type of funding that we used to see in the past. So what they're essentially doing is saying, all right, if you're going to get money from the state, our tax dollars, your own money back, you need to get into some sort of way of matching and leveraging funds, hence the development of what they call the self-help counties. As I mentioned, we've been up there several times. We continue to work through the legislature to see if there's other alternatives, but they have been going to the shift for matching funds, which is currently being enjoyed by 81% of the population of California. So as we're sitting today, 20 counties have self-help initiatives in place. Last year in California, that raised $4 billion in transportation infrastructure on a statewide basis, actually 4.5. There are currently 15 other counties besides San Luis Obispo that are considering this move. And the biggest reason for it is because the way the legislation was written, it allows an agency to tax locally and maintain control of those local tax dollars. So the money does not go to Sacramento and stay there. The money stays here in the county and then is allocated for each of the different jurisdictions. In the proposal that is moved forward for the board, we're looking at a program that would generate $25 million per year based on half-cent sales tax. With our look at economic development factors and working with the Chamber and others, we know that about half of that money will be generated by visitors to this area, whether they're buying wine or enjoying vacation, whatever. It's a substantial part of it. The funds would be used for local projects only. Local, local, local. Sacramento can't touch it. It also allows us to compete for those matching grants, and those can be as much as a 1-for-1 all the way up to a 1-for-10, which really extends the amount of money that can be allocated to a different project. This applies to not only regional projects, but to bicycle and pedestrian, a downtown infrastructure, a variety of different programs that are on the table. What's really important about this and what we've been working really hard with member agencies and also with SLOCOG is clearly defining a list of programs and projects. It may not surprise you to know that voters in California and voters here in San Luis Obispo are not real crazy about the idea of paying a tax without being told exactly what it's going to be used for. The trust factor is just not there as much as it would be. So one of the things that's included in this plan, of course, is the Citizens Oversight Committee, which says once the plan is developed and approved by the member agencies, the projects and programs that are in there are the specific ones that will be funded and will be built. So you can't say, I'm going to spend X number of dollars on local streets and roads and turn around and put in an interchange, unless that's the local match, which I'll talk about in just a moment. So over the course of our outreach program, we conducted a statistically valid telephone poll. This is for likely voters because we're coming into a presidential election, which means it's different than high propensity. We get people who maybe have never voted before, and in this election, we're expecting a lot of young people. So that included cell phones as well as telephones and a variety of different things to make sure we've got the right mix, including some internet as well. What we heard was that local streets and road repair improvements were the most important countywide, bike and pedestrian projects that connect communities, and then increases in transit services for at-risk populations, seniors, veterans, students, people who need to be able to get around the county, also people that are looking for what we call point-to-point services. And these are the ability for, based on need, folks to be able to get to medical appointments or to get groceries or this sort of thing if they cannot access normal public transportation, either based on disability, age, or number of other factors that work into that. So this is the conceptual master plan, which is before you tonight. And this, again, is how it's been divided based on, again, the polling, a series of focus groups, 75 presentations that were done countywide that were attended by about 700 people, as well as individual meetings with all of the jurisdictions, including here in Grover Beach. So half of the money is going to what we call local control. That's $112 million. When we say local control, that means that here in Grover Beach, you would be able to decide specifically what projects you want to fund. Within that, we also have 25% of the money going to regional projects of significance. So these are those types of things that would have multiple jurisdictions relieving traffic congestion and major projects that could not be done without a collaborative effort. Then we have a substantial amount, 15% going to bike and pedestrian, and of course 10% going to transit. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about those in general. On the overview for all of these things, there is a 1% management administrative fee that is utilized by SLOCOG to manage these. And that's basically managing the Citizen Oversight Committee, conducting the annual audits, working with folks to do the RFP process in order to get these projects delivered and on the ground. Development, this is a question we've had a couple times. People who are building in this area, they still pay impact fees. So this does not replace those. Developers still have to pay their fair share of what their impact would be to local streets and roads. Funds are not intended to replace the current allocation, but the idea here is to increase, just enhance them. So we know here in Grover Beach there are some funds available through a parcel tax that allow you to get local streets and roads. We also know from talking with some of your residents and staff, even with that, it's still not enough. So the idea is this would be additional funding that would help augment that. Again, we have an annual audit and a reporting, and of course an independent tax oversight committee. So in the regional highway projects, what we're talking about here in this general vicinity are things like Shell Beach, Pismo Beach, 101 congestion relief. We recently completed the regional transportation plan and the 101 corridor study. There were a number of things that were identified, and we know that this is part of the things that are coming up big in this area. Obviously, also congestion relief in the south of SLO area, North County in the Highway 10146 area, that interchange. And then we heard a lot about North Coast Highway 1, just general improvements connecting from basically Morro Bay all the way up to the next county line. When we talk about bike and pedestrian connectivity, we have a number of projects that have been championed countywide where there's a lot of collaboration between the various jurisdictions. So we're looking at right now three or four that look to be the front runners in this particular item, the City to See Bob Jones Trail, Atascadero-Templeton Corridor, mentioned the Morro Bay-Cayucas Connector, and then there'd be the ability for all the member agencies to basically apply for and compete for additional grant funding for local and or regional bicycle improvement and pedestrian improvements. Now, public transportation, this is one that is extremely important. On the 7% as it sits right now, and that we were speaking earlier today, I believe that this number has changed just in the last couple of days. This is evolving, but transit is telling us now that we're looking more at 6% for buses for the maintenance and then for operational increases, which would be additional routes, fare box, all that sort of thing. And then 3% that would go to services directly for seniors, veterans, and people with disabilities, which basically triples the amount of capacity we have for those things like point-to-point and reduced fare. And given the age of the population, the aging that we're seeing as we move forward, we feel that that's really important. And then the 1% is transportation demand management categories, which, of course, help increase efficiency and movement through the corridors. So on the local road repair side, when we presented to the board, there was a little confusion. I think I want to make sure I do this very clearly tonight. 50% is your money, is of this. Grover Beach decides what they want to do with that. In that 50%, they are asking that 4% of the overall goes to safe routes to schools, which means it's your projects in Grover Beach, but 4% would be for pedestrian or bike connectivity in neighborhoods to get kids to schools or to high schools or even to colleges more efficiently, depending on the jurisdiction. The 10%, which is community enhancements, Grand Avenue is a great example. Any type of amenity, parking, improvements to medians, any of that kind of stuff that could be used for a community-based as opposed to a new road, that can be used in that. The rest of it, you can use for local streets and roads, you can use for grand, you can use for an intersection, you can use it however you want to use it in this community. And we've been working very closely with staff to develop those ideas. So, backing up here. So hey, these are just some of the things that we've heard so far. You would get here in the city of Grover
Beach. Excuse me, yep. Hey, Jim, it's hard to concentrate. Thanks. Okay.
So you're going to get basically $691,491 a year for local priorities right here in Grover Beach. That's, I guess, just over $6 million over the 9 years. Plus, as we all know, some of these regional projects do have an effect here. My brother lives here in Grover Beach, and so we drive this all the time. You know what the 101 is at certain times of day. Same thing in other parts of the county. So those regional things do affect us all, even if you're commuting to other parts of the county. So it's important to note that. Local projects suggested through the public engagement included, of course, local street maintenance and repair, Grand Avenue improvements, additional paving, bike lanes, pedestrian crossings, a coastal path perhaps around Highway 1 that came up a couple of times for both pedestrian and potentially bike, and boardwalk to Grand Avenue. You'll be telling us through staff what you want your projects to be. And they don't have to be, you don't have to name, like it's local streets and roads, you don't have to give us the list of every single street. It's just that this is the idea of how much, in terms of streets and roads, how many miles, how many lanes, what types of things you want to do. And the reason for that is we want to work really closely with your community and staff so everybody has a very clear understanding about what's in the plan, so that they understand what is there for local benefit and that if there is something that they want to support. Our role is not to advocate for or against the measure, but simply to say, this is what's in it, and if you have questions about how that's going to be implemented, you know, we're here to answer those. I mentioned the regional projects, of course, would include congestion on Highway 101 South. So what we're doing at this point is we're making presentations at all of the seven jurisdictions as well as the county. In May, there's going to be a special board meeting to address the specific elements of the plan. We're going to be talking about those regional projects and which ones might run to the top. When we get to the June meeting, we will have an expenditure plan in place, and it will list by jurisdiction all the different projects as well as the specific investments for both the transit, bicycle, pedestrian, and then those regional investments. So it'll be very clearly defined. Then we'll be back in July, provided the board decides to move forward, with a request to the Board of Supervisors to place this on the November ballot. If that happens, that'll go forward to the Board of Supervisors. They will ask for that to be on the ballot, and that would happen at their July meeting. A couple things to keep in mind on this. There will be, if in the very few days, a project-specific site for this, which is going to be selfhelpslow.org. We might get a .com, too. This may be easy. And in that way, Grover Beach residents would be able to very easily to go online and see what specifically is in it for Grover Beach and take a look at all the upcoming meetings, workshops, presentations. We will be at Rotaries. We're going to be at school districts. We're going to be at churches. We're going to be anywhere we can possibly be to make sure people have all the information, all the facts regarding this particular measure. And with that, I'm available to answer any questions you might have about the process, what comes next, or any of those types of things that go with it.
Thank you, Kendall. Okay, let's see who's got questions. Mary?
I have a couple. It's a half-cent sales tax. Have you compared how our area, because we are trying to get tourism, how our area's sales tax compares to other areas?
In terms of what your overall tax rate is?
Right.
Well, in talking with the Downtown Association, with the Chamber of Commerce, neither one of them felt that that would be an issue. In fact, you're not on the high end. Los Angeles, Long Beach, San Diego are all higher than you at this point. And what we found also statistically speaking, that when you move forward with these taxes, they tend not to have a negative impact on tourism or on that sort of piece. Ironically, because of the volume of traffic that we have, looking at 46 and 101, a lot of that traffic is, in fact, caused by tourism and by visitors. And when you have better roads, safer roads, sometimes that is obviously viewed as a positive and something that would be, you know, better than worse. So the answer would be there hasn't been a demonstrated negative. And, in fact, as I mentioned, 80% of the counties, 80% of the population in California is now in a self-help county, and there's been no demonstrated correlation between any downtick in sales tax or downtick in any type of tourism-driven activities.
Okay, and I was just going along with your timeline. Do you mean that we would have to have the specifics of what Grover Beach would spend our allocation on by July?
Before that. But the good news is that, keeping in mind that Grover Beach participated with LOCOG and with their own staff, you have a capital improvement program that's in place, and you also participated in the regional transportation plan. So what you're really doing is prioritizing those things that kind of rise to the top. And our, of course, suggestion, it's your call as elected officials, but we're saying, here's the information that we gathered from your residents, and by the polling, we're sharing all that information. So when you make those decisions, you know, think about what kind of things your constituents want to see, if any of them. I mean, they may, you know, who's to say? But we did see that there was definitely the things I pointed out were the things that rose to the top in this community and in the county as a whole.
One thing I've heard so many citizens have asked about, but we just thought we could never afford it, and maybe something, but I wanted to know if it would be covered by the funding. We're planning to put a resort at the end of Grand Avenue, mm-hmm. and people would love an easier way to cross Highway 1, such as a bridge over Highway 1. Now, would that by any means be covered?
Let me answer that two ways. One, that Highway 1 is a Caltrans roadway. There's still, you know, there's some issues with that. But if you were able to get their approval and you wanted to spend your money that way, you certainly could. The question really is the cost of it. And they also would point out that the development that goes in there, the whatever impact fees that developer paid, you know, you could also look at that as a way of offsetting some of those costs, because having all those people there then, you know, negatively increases the amount of traffic and whatnot. So if you can get people off the streets and over, you know, you could do that. It's a challenging thing to do. They've tried it in other communities, very similar. Dana Point, for example, was one of them. There are very few overcrossings that have been successful, but you can do it.
Okay. Thank you. Sure. That's all my questions.
Okay. Karen?
Thank you. A couple real simple things. First of all, can you give me the website address again, please?
Sure. selfhelpslow.org. I believe .com will point there as well. We just felt it would be easier for the public to just be able to go to one place and see all of the meetings and all the materials as it relates to this, because SLOCOG has got a number of other initiatives and projects out there. We wanted to make it as easy as possible for people to access the information.
I think that's wise. And then you had talked about you had done 75 presentations. Mm-hmm. And did you say that it had been attended by 700 people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then regarding the conceptual investment plan, so 50% will go to local road repair and transportation improvements, but 10%, so basically 14% of those funds are dedicated to 10% to community enhancements and 4% to safe right.
They're still yours to spend only here in Grover Beach and only for projects that you want to fund. The safe routes to schools, the reason that's called out is that in every community we went to, including this one, there was concerns about additional safety factors for kids that are walking or riding bikes to and from. That's the kind of thing you could fund with that. So most jurisdictions that are looking at that would be partnering with your local school district and saying, hey, where are the areas that we've got some challenges? So those funds go there. The 10% is really designed to help go with what we call community enhancement. But you could use that for bus stations. You could use that for a transit center. You could use that for, as I mentioned, medians, anything that enhances the viability of your downtown core with that whole Grand Avenue corridor. There's a lot of flexibility in it. What they were trying to do is make sure that it didn't all go to pavement, so that there were some things in there because there were some other needs that were expressed in the community, and they wanted to make sure that those were addressed.
I just find, 4% of $600,000, I just think that's kind of odd.
You can spend more if you wanted to, and there's also crossovers in that. You'll find in the bike-ped situation that in many of those instances where we have bicycle improvements, they may also be safe route to school improvements. And you may choose, as there's a couple agencies I know, they're going to put more money into bicycle and pedestrian in their community because it's what they want. It's what their community is asking for. So there's a lot of flexibility in it that allows you to really custom what's going to be best for your community.
Thank you.
Sure.
Jeff?
Just a couple questions. Now, if we did move forward and SLOCOG moved forward and it did appear on the ballot, it's a two-thirds majority?
Yes.
Okay. And then the polling that you did, so when we polled for our K-14, at this point we were actually above 70%. So do you have a percentage of where?
We do. We are currently at 63.5. But that was based on a 20-year measure. A previous poll was out of a 10-year, which basically had a swing, if you will, of anywhere between 5 and 10 points. The firm we were using is Gabi Research. Their estimation was you're probably more realistically looking at a 5-point swing, which would put us in the hunt. Is it an uphill climb? Absolutely, because there's no, there's no guarantee. But it is in keeping with the same levels of support that we're seeing in Stanislaus County, Placer County, and others that are all moving towards the ballot. And with the funding plan that we have for the outreach program moving forward, identifying these projects, the board felt that it was a good shot to try. The advantage of the 2016 ballot is that because it is going to be such a large election, these types of measures tend to be more widely viewed and looked at by more people in those types of situations. In off years, the voter turnout is lower, and so there's less likelihood of success.
Okay. So which actually leads to my next question of why it looks like a lot of the coastal counties are moving forward with a consideration of this. Why was it not done previously, or why does this group of counties?
Well, we're working with four of them right now. Two of them were actually managing their ballot initiatives. But here's the situation. Last year, I think it was a real jolt for a lot of folks because California, even in the last several months, pulled back state transportation funding. And really, everybody's kind of hit this cliff where they kept waiting for the legislature to put into place some sort of a funding mechanism. But the money that came out of it was 1B is gone. So now you have Monterey, Ventura, us, Stanislaus, Placer,
Sonoma just went or is getting ready to go. Everybody's lining up because it's really demonstrated based on the historical fact the only way to guarantee a long-term funding source for transportation investment in a particular area. There, you can also, do other types of taxes. You can do parcel taxes. You can do all these different things. But the way the law was written, this is actually the one that has turned out to be the most successful.
Okay. And then a last question: if the approach did move forward, mm-hmm. how much are you anticipating or programming to spend on the outreach program between now and November?
Well, we've got a budget of $135,000 that will basically take SLOCOG through basically up to like October-ish. But again, we cannot advocate for a ballot measure. So there likely is another group out there that is a political action committee that would fund a more robust campaign. But to be clear, if this council is supportive of this type of measure, there's no way these type of things pass without local support from elected officials and from local communities. And it needs to be from all the communities. So if we put all the information out there and people are like, you know what, I know my roads are yucky, but I'm just not into that, you know, okay. But they need to have the facts to know what the options are out there, because there's going to be no relief coming from Sacramento anytime soon. And as we've made the argument previously, and I think you guys have seen this here in Grover Beach, when you have roads that are in disrepair, the longer they remain in disrepair, the more expensive it becomes to repair them. And the longer you put off major infrastructure projects like intersections or roads, wherever these things are, they just get more expensive. So at some point, I think that's what at least I heard from the SLOCOG board at their earlier meeting, it's like nobody's running around saying, great, let's have a sales tax, but they're saying we've got infrastructure needs that are not being addressed, and we're trying to figure out what are the options on the table for looking at it. This may be one that we want to take to the voters and see what they have to say.
Thanks.
Barbara?
Yeah. We have a signage issue in Grover Beach on the streets. Numbers spelled out, numbers in numeric placement at intersections, very inconsistent. Would this kind of funding cover fixing that type of...
I believe it would, actually.
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
And your prerogative.
Yeah.
Very good.
And you could have entrance signs, all kinds of things like that.
Okay. Mine?
Okay. So let me just, since Jeff asked part of the polling question, Pam, what was the sample size, and do we know how many were... people were reached in South County?
We do, and I apologize. I thought we had sent that over to everyone, but if not, we will resend that to you. We do have the complete polling results. The sample size was 600, which is a margin of error of 3%, and actually it was 687 altogether. Yeah, because we went over. So it was a combination of online as well as landline and cell phone, and that's largely because of the demographic in this particular county. We want to make sure that you're getting everybody, and not everybody communicates the same way. The sample size was constructed by supervisorial districts, so you can actually look at it and see for each of these areas what people said. To be fair, it would be disingenuous to say that we had a high enough sample size of Grover Beach voters, mm-hmm. because it's a small community compared to some of the others, but you can look and see commonalities in the five cities area and what people said. And that was one of the reasons that in addition to the focus of those in addition to the polling, we did those focus groups where we had people from all the various cities, different political parties, different ages, different ethnic backgrounds, talk to them there. And then we've been making, as I said, multiple presentations, including Grover Beach Rotary, talking to the chamber, all that sort of stuff to kind of get that information. Okay. And I have to say it's been very consistent. We haven't heard a whole lot of differing viewpoints, with few exceptions on major, interchange kind of projects, but everybody's pretty much on the same page.
So you haven't talked to folks from the AGGB Chamber of Commerce, correct?
Okay. Okay.
All right. Very good.
Economic Vitality Partnership. And
no, I just want to make sure. I mean, obviously, we've got all this in written form. People who are watching, people who are in the audience, this is information they need to know.
We will make the polling results, the complete polling results, available. I'll get those over. And in fact, I can send those to the city clerk for distribution to staff. And also, I would say put it on your website. I know it's going to be ours if it isn't already.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Kendall.
Thank you.
Ron, did you have something you want to close with?
Yeah, just one additional thing. The outreach we've had was one of trying to determine what are the issues, what are the concerns, what are your projects. Through that results, we came up with this investment plan that you've seen, We are now starting that process of going back out to reach. So we will be going back to the Rotaries and the Kiwanis Clubs and other service agencies to get their input on the plan, investment plan itself.
Okay, very good. Let me open this up to the public. I have two speaker request slips. Let's see, Dan Revor.
Good evening, Mayor Scholes and members of the council. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is Dan Revoir, and I live in San Luis Obispo, and I'm the executive director of Bike Slow County. On behalf of our board and over 4,500 supporters throughout San Luis Obispo County, I'm here to urge your support for SLOCOG's placing a transportation-specific sales tax on the 2016 ballot. Bike Slow County exists on behalf of local residents that believe a complete network of safe streets for biking, walking, and driving is absolutely essential to our local quality of life. This viewpoint isn't exclusive to folks that support us or to folks that love riding hundreds of miles on weekends with padded shorts. It's a pervasive viewpoint in San Luis Obispo County. It's shared by parents and kids looking for safe routes to get to school. It's shared by business leaders who are hoping for healthier community, healthier commute options for their employees, and shared by decision makers like you, who are really looking for ways to manage traffic congestion on a regional scale to help our residents, our constituents, live happy, healthy lives while making sure we're being good stewards of our local resources and dealing with our local constraints. There's no question that transportation funding in California is abysmal, and it's presenting us with a very real threat to our ability to accomplish some of these local goals and to deliver on our local values. We know you're in between a rock and a hard place, and some of our neighboring counties are beating us out simply on these types of projects by using the local funds that are generated for competitive grants and building projects with the funding directly. Neighboring counties in Santa Barbara and the LA area, as well as the major population centers in the Bay Area, have been able to pursue congestion mitigation projects and pursue safe routes to school projects, regional bikeway projects at a pace that far exceeds our county. And so our voters believe, we believe that our voters deserve the chance to weigh in, to compete, to empower your city to build new infrastructure, to build better bikeways, to accomplish our local goals, and help local residents live tangibly better lives. We envision the projects in your bike plan being built out. We envision a safer corridor along Highway 1 for folks who are visiting to safely ride a bike, to visit the amenities here in your community as they stay and enjoy the South Coast. And so, once again, on behalf of Bike Slow County's board and our thousands of supporters of, throughout San Luis Obispo County, we ask for your support to SLOCOG in placing this transportation-specific sales tax on the ballot. And if you're looking for more thoughts about the types of projects that, we believe would be a great fit for the Safe Routes to School area in your community, we really can be a valuable resource to that. And we definitely would like you to look closely at your bike plan and encourage staff to look at your bike plan and talk to your local schools and look at the constraints at the schools to identify those projects. And we know firsthand how much community members love that stuff. So thank you so much. Have a good one.
Thank you, Dan. Andrea Seastrand.
Well, thank you. Andrea Seastrand, resident of Grover Beach, 851 North 5th Street, and also vice president of the Central Coast Taxpayers Association. So I know there's been approximately a 30-minute presentation of why this is good, and I would just like to read a letter from the Central Coast Taxpayers Association as to why the Board of Directors studied and voted to oppose the self-help county tax proposal. For several reasons, and I did email letters to all of you, and I have hard copies. CCTA opposes it for several reasons. One, the governor and the legislature have not made transportation funding a priority. A recent report from the state Senate said 68% of California roads are in poor or mediocre condition, the 44th worst record in the nation. The report also said the cost for all of the unfunded repairs identified by state and local officials in the coming decade is about $135 billion. I think we all agree on that. Two, the governor and the legislature continue its quest to build the California High-Speed Rail. Billions of taxpayers' dollars are being wasted on this project that could be spent on our roads. An independent study of the project, the California High-Speed Rail proposal, a due diligence report by the respected Reason Foundation, clearly documented that the actual cost of the project would be closer to $100 billion and serve fewer riders than claimed by backers of the bullet train. The negative predictions about high-speed rail have not only come to pass, the project is even worse than thought. So I want to tell you, our roads need $135 billion, and here we're talking about $100 billion on some high-speed rail that will not touch the Central Coast. Three, the governor and the legislature continue to support Caltrans' bloated bureaucracy. Even though Caltrans claims that they are at their lowest staffing in recent history, they are still overstaffed by some 3,300 architects and engineers. That means some $470 million per year is not getting to our roads. The books for Caltrans have not been able to be audited, and the Caltrans director cannot back up any of his claims with supportable documentation. At least to the satisfaction of the Legislative Analyst's Office and the State Auditor's Department. Four, the recent SLOCOG poll, or the original one, found that increasing a local half-cent sales tax would fall decisively with the voters. They do not trust that elected officials will spend the money properly and efficiently. And I would just say, if you are very much aware of the Willow Road State Highway interchange, $1 million over plus was spent for planting oak trees, something like $316 per acorn, part of a mitigation plan, and they came back to the board twice to ask for more to get water to those acorns. And I don't know about you, but I pulled the plug on my irrigation system because the governor asked us to reduce our water consumption by 25%, and I know the city did the same. So here we have voters now being asked to approve a new $25 million per year sales tax for transportation. They need transparency. They need accountability on how those dollars are being used before they're asked to pay for more in taxes. Five, last point, the state of California has stolen, I want to emphasize, stolen our local gas taxes and unwisely spent those dollars on many failed programs, such as those I mentioned. Those are just a few. Bring back common sense and stop the taxation glut of Sacramento. The state has a spending priority problem, not a revenue problem. And I just ask you, as a resident of Grover Beach, I've asked this of the Board of Supervisors, I've asked it of SLOCOG, when are we going to stand up and push back at the state? Well, CCTA respectfully requests SLOCOG oppose the self-help county tax proposal, and I'm asking you as my city government. We further request that SLOCOG basically send letters, maybe we have to do more than that, to the governor, the legislature, to the League of Cities and the CSAC, the California State Association of Counties, to strongly request that the state get with it, it's not in the letter, and prioritize transportation funding. There's a scam going on here, and you're asked now to fill in the pieces or the dollars. Enough is enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Is there anyone else? I think Sharon's got her hand up. Oh, you still have your mic? Perfect. Okay. Well, tonight it is.
Well, I have a couple of questions. One is, I want to know, I've lost track, how many different taxes the residents of Grover Beach spend for roads or transportation issues. So that's one. And then also, did I understand that we must have the specifics of how we are going to spend these funds or appropriate them by July? We're almost May. then June, that's 2 months.
Thank you, Sharon. Is there anyone else? Mr. DeCarli, did you want to respond? I think those are very valid questions.
Regarding the specifics of identifying the projects by July, we're really needing to define some of the really big projects by July. I would anticipate that if you're looking at street and road maintenance and trying to define those roads, you're probably not going to be at that position. I know this city has worked probably a long time, many months, trying to define what your key priorities on those projects under your prior formula funding that you've had. I think what's important is to be able to define that we want to do resurface Grand Avenue or that we want to, you know, resurface streets. But it's really at your prerogative to define it as you think is best for so that the citizens in your city here know what you're proposing to do. If it's primarily street road maintenance, fine. If it's more curb cuts and extending sidewalks, fine. If it's part of a coastal trail, fine. I think that's what we're trying to get at. It's not necessary to define all those projects. In addition to that, one key thing that we'll do if this moves forward is develop a funding strategic plan. And we would expect that about a year from now or so. We would expect probably work in 6 months or so to try and define what are the key priority projects that we have. For instance, our consultant mentioned some of the big projects like Highway 101, Shaw Beach, Pismo Beach area. That project isn't going to be ready to fund and construct for a good 4 or 5 years. We would want to work with your staff and all the jurisdictions and say, what are the other projects you want to advance? We might be able to do several years of advancement of projects until such time that bigger project is ready to go. That's why we'd be developing the strategic plan. So it'd be your prerogative if you'd want to define certain projects or if you want to have a broader perspective, and then we would define those in the strategic plan.
Well, before you leave, can you, Mayor Pro Tem Lee asked a really good question earlier about why this was not done sooner. And maybe you can kind of talk about previous efforts or something.
We have been tracking the sales tax since it first started back in 1989. So it seems, you know, we will do a poll, it seems every 5, maybe 10 years to try and track and see where we are. And every time it's just been just not quite there, or we found the state legislature passed some kind of a funding program. It seems the state legislature typically has provided some funding, state or federal level, once a decade. And they're talking about it now. But from what we're understanding, there's a systemic problem with the gas tax. It's not going to be fixed with vehicle miles traveled fee. It's not going to be fixed with cap and trade funding. And basically what the state legislature says is you fix it. And I think that's what we're hearing. We certainly concur, the Taxpayers Association, that the state should step up to the plate and provide this funding. The League of California Cities, County Supervisors Association of California, all major transportation interests statewide are all united to try and get the state legislature to pass a measure. The likelihood of it just is not very good. It's what we're hearing.
Okay, and then if I understand correctly, I don't know if it was in 2010 or one of those years, there was some polling that was done. And I believe the consultant came to the Slow Cog board and said the numbers, there wasn't enough support and recommended not going forward.
That's been the case the last 3 times.
Okay.
So this time what we're finding, I think the real significant difference is that the state and federal funding has, as our consultant mentioned, completely collapsed. And I think that's the real difference, is there is a fiscal cliff now. And I think everyone's realizing with no answer. And therefore, we're starting to see, wow, this might be the only issue we have. And congestion's getting worse. Our street roads are getting worse. I think that's a significant difference between the two.
Okay, thank you, Ron. And then I think the other question, Sharon, that you brought up, and it's a really good question, is how many? And I think that's something that I know from my perspective was concerned about, right? Because there was a measure in 2006. A portion of those funds have been used for streets and roads. The bond measure was another one. And so certainly
understanding the community has stepped up and certainly not taking this lightly. So I think we need to have some discussion about whether, and I think staff is asking for some feedback on a few things, right? So they're looking for feedback on the draft investment plan, which is, I believe, attachment 2.
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. There's three things that we're looking for. Is a comment on the draft, investment plan categories and distributions, if the council is okay with that concept of what the distribution has been brought forward. Direction for identifying projects or concepts, okay, and not specific. And then the third is direction for staff to work with SLOCOG regarding the developing the final transportation plan. That would be based on the number 1.
Okay. And then I think at some point maybe you or Mr. Carley can just give us clarification of the council's actions tonight. What if the council chooses to move forward with either, I think, alternative 1, or what does that mean? Does that mean just moving forward in the process? Because I wanted to be clear that
we're really here mainly to hear from you and to take comment, because okay, the action item is really at the SLOCOG board level, right? But at this point, what we really want to hear is if there are any concerns or questions or something that you feel is not addressed, we would then take those back with the other comments and then revisit those back at the SLOCOG board. There'll be a later action, which will be an actual action item that would be a resolution to put it on the ballot. And I want to be clear, it's not necessarily a resolution of support. It's a resolution to put it on the ballot and say that, you know, is this something that the voters should have an opportunity to decide? As individual elected officials, you may choose to publicly support or not support whatever your desire may be. But at this point, it's an informational item to just let you know this is what has come up. It's based on the outreach we've heard thus far, and we just want to make sure that if there's any glaring omissions that we know that. And I guess the action is to we would hope, direct staff to work with us to develop a project list or a criteria list of the things you would be wanting to fund should those funds become available.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Kendall. So I'm going to close it to the public and bring it back to the council. So, City Manager, can you say that one more time? So we are looking for feedback on the draft investment plan.
Yeah, so SLOCOG is looking for that feedback, as we've discussed tonight, on the investment plan to see if those are council supportive of the disbursement or if they need to provide anything further for that. Staff's looking for direction for how our participation is to work with SLOCOG on that investment plan.
Okay.
Then we're also looking to identify some key concepts or projects, maybe not specific, but it can be in general, such as grand avenues, like Mr. DeCarley mentioned and what he said. And we can go over some of those concepts if you wish.
Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, who wants to jump in? So reluctant tonight. Mayor Pro Tem Barbara, you want to jump in?
Yeah.
You go for it.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity because we haven't been getting much funding from the state. And I agree that the bullet train is a
boondoggle?
Yeah. Thank you. I was trying to find a nice word. by turning this down or saying we're not interested in this gives us no guarantee whatsoever that the state is going to reverse its position on the bullet train and we're going to get all that money instead. So I think we need to take what we have while it's offered. I think we are in a position right now where we have several key projects that would fit in here, such as the Grand Avenue Oak Park intersection, doing the redo of that as a gateway, getting consistency in our street signs, which I'm hearing a lot of complaints about lately. And I think because I've become conscious of how you don't know where they're going, where to look for a street sign when you approach an intersection. So I think it's a good way to go.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
I'll echo some of those comments. I think it's an opportunity that could be a multi-pronged approach with regards to, yes, this funding, if it comes available, along with agreeing with a number of the items in the letter that Ms. Seastrand wrote, that the state does need to step up and somewhat at a loss as to how to push the state around, but that's probably a discussion for another day. But I think where I am supportive of putting this on the ballot or moving it forward to the next step is so that the population, that the community can decide once and for all if this is something that they would like to participate in. So going towards the projects, yes, Grand Avenue and Oak Park is one that immediately springs to mind. West Grand Avenue improvements down by the lodge, as public improvements, could be another project. Some of our bike path or our pedestrian boardwalk, but that could be something that our 5-year capital projects list can start with. I'm anticipating or about to put words into Mr. DeCarli's mouth by saying if we fund a list of projects and then decide to modify that during the course of this potential 9 years, that I would anticipate that SLOCOG would work with us to reprioritize projects as they came forward. But that's just a gut level reaction on my part. But from that perspective, I don't know if we need to provide specific direction on the projects, or if that would be a subsequent meeting to actually pick those.
So why don't we, let's do this, hold off. Let's have some discussion on that. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
My basic point is that I think it's up to the population and the community as to whether they want to be participating in this program, which I think it helps in any number of ways, but it's ultimately the community and the county residents are going to have their say if it moves forward.
Great. Kendall, can you address the Mayor Pro Tem's comment about changing the projects? I know that this came up at Slow Cut.
Yeah, it's it's the good news, bad news, okay? So if you're talking about investments for road maintenance or road repair, and you speak about that in general terms, that's not a problem. What we know from successful measures and from other folks is that the taxpayers want, demand, and deserve transparency. So if you go out and tell them you're going to spend it on X, that's why you have a citizens advisory committee that comes in and says, okay, did you do that? So I would caution councils, and the same way I cautioned the board, is that while there are opportunities for flexibility, don't make it be a marquee project. So if you're talking about Grand Avenue, you better be fixing Grand Avenue. But if there's some other things out there that you say, you know, future pedestrian or, you know, future road improvements, those are the kinds of things you can be general with. And as we all know, you never know what's going to happen with, you know, weather, natural disaster, whatever else. Something may come up, and that's one of the things the Citizens Advisory Committee can do is, you know, work with you to make that happen. It's one of the reasons that the language has been written in that way to really give you maximum flexibility. But I would encourage you to work with staff and try to be as clear as possible about the intentions of what you're going to do with the money. Because I think that if you want to get the money and you want something to get passed, it's going to be imperative that you're very clear and not wishy-washy about it. If that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Karen?
Thank you. Thank you. I agree with Jeff in the respect that I would like to see this go forward so that the voters can have a say. I think it's important that I wouldn't keep it from the ballot, because I think people need to have that opportunity to say whether or not that's, you know, how important they think it is. to answer some of these other questions, I like the sunset provision. I think that's important. I think the investment plan categories are, I think they're adequate. I like that. I like that part of it. I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around that 4% requirement of, for us, we're looking at like $26,000 that we've got to put on something that I don't know how we're going to, but anyway.
Is that considered a minimum amount, correct?
It is, and keep in mind, it's not necessarily every year. So what will happen is that over the course of the 9 years, you may have one project that you want to do that's $200,000 or one project that's $250,000. So don't think of it as like $25,000 a year that gets allocated, right?
Okay.
It's an overall spending. And that's incredibly important also for the regional projects because you need to wait that 6-7 years to amass enough money to be able to make it happen.
Well, so, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, how on earth are we going to... How are you going to do a project like that? It just didn't make any sense to me.
No.
Okay, well, that makes more sense to me.
And you can
also
leverage those funds. That's another thing to keep in mind. So if you're, again, I forget what the number is for you, but let's say it was $100,000 over the course, you could leverage that to get an additional $100,000 or even $200,000 to expand.
Okay, gotcha. Well, okay. I like that a little better. Let's see. So I guess that's pretty much what I have to say about that now. Thank you.
Okay. Miriam?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what's been said. I think keeping it from the voters because we disagree with what Sacramento is doing, it would be a little bit cutting off our nose to spite our face, and I don't think voters like that in politics. So I think we should give them a chance to say no if they want to say no. And... I would just say with also, you know, we specifically understand, I like that it's only 9 years because in 9 years maybe the state will catch up to what's going on. And we know specifically in Grover Beach that when roads are neglected for a period of 9 years or more, but even 9 years makes a huge, huge difference. So it's very important. And I think that's what's going to be such the uphill battle here because, well, the roads aren't that bad yet. But when we wait until they're that bad, it's going to be a huge issue. And I don't know how that will be communicated, and I'm glad that's your job. As far as making the specific list of projects, I really like what Barbara said about Oak Park and Grand, because we're just not sure right now if we can fund getting rid of that bump.
Right.
And what we recently heard at our meeting was people here, they just want sidewalks so badly, and maybe we could just finally do this sidewalk inventory and fill in the blanks and make this the walkable city it deserves to be. And the street signs as well, because I notice that all the time as well. But I would like, if we really are, pretty married to these projects for 9 years, I would like us to have a separate discussion, almost the way we do our city goals, so that we can really get into what we're going to say to the voters, because I really don't want to change too much once we do that.
Yeah. All great comments, and Miriam, I didn't ask Kendall the question that I asked at the COG board meeting was, the timing, this just feels short time frame. I mean, you typically don't do things this quickly. It's usually a longer process.
Well,
so.
I would like to just address that twofold. One, we actually started on this process in 2015. I mean, you can argue that we've been thinking about it earlier than that because the need has been identified from the time we started working on the regional transportation plan. As you know, there's simply not enough money to fund the things that we need. That being said, all the counties that are going forward right now are pretty much all in the same. In fact, you're even a little farther ahead of two or three of them that haven't even done their polling yet or have not put their plan together. And again, one of the things that we did differently that in some of the previous efforts is rather than having SLOCOG say these are the projects the region needs or even having individual jurisdictions do that in a vacuum, we started with the public and we went to them first to say, okay, what are your priorities? Because we found, not so much here, but in some of the other communities, staff or electeds may say it's this project, and the resident is like, it's this project. So that really has changed the way that this plan was developed. Is it quick? Absolutely. Do we believe we can do it? Absolutely. That's what I tell Ron every time he calls. but it is, and I make no mistake, if you do decide to move forward as a group, you know, when you get forward on that, it's if you are interested as elected officials in seeing this happen for your community, there's going to come a point where you're not going to be able to sit on the sidelines with that. You're going to have to become involved with it. So it is what it is. Nobody's real happy about it. But
you refined those points since the SLOCOG board meeting. Very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, because we know that when we had this question that we faced in 2006, we were about a year or so out, I mean, to do the education and whatnot. So we're really talking about 2 to 3 months. So that, you know, if this does move forward, that does mean that you're going to have a lot of key stakeholders. And I know you've already met with chambers and whatnot. And so it'll be interesting to see who steps up to the plate. But let me give you my thoughts. Sharon hit the nail right on the head, and Ron will attest to this. When I had first gotten back in office, he had said, hey, we're still looking at this, want to get some feedback. And I said, time out. You know, between 2006 measure and the bond, my community is fatigued. And I can't tell you that I can get behind this, and I think I said that directly to him. So, Sharon, your points are well taken, and that just really is in the back of my mind. It means I'm not necessarily crazy about this, but when I was shared, the poll results were shared with the board, saying you're polling at 63.5%, and if you go down to the 9-year sunset, you gain another 5 to 7%. So that means you are in the ballpark, and I'm not going to be one. As I said then, and I'm going to say it now, I believe in giving people a voice and a vote, and this is what we're talking about. So without telegraphing to anyone that I'm in support or whatever, that's a decision that we all have to make when the time comes. And the board, the board of supervisors are going to have to actually put this on a ballot. So, with that said, draft investment plan, I think it works with 50% coming to the communities. That means everybody gets something out of this. And Karen, you touched on this, the formula. Quite honestly, when if you were to start to track where the sales tax comes in and compare Grover to Pismo Beach, and then you look at the formulas here, I think this is very fair and generous to Grover Beach. With respect to the 9-year sunset, I think that's the number is clearly, as Jeff, you talked about, your polling showed 70%, and then that went down. So I think we do need to do that. Safeguards, I think everybody's okay with. We definitely would have to see some safeguards. I mean, it's an oversight committee. So everybody's okay with that. And then, yes, the key project. So here's what I'm glad we're having this conversation, because I was sitting there thinking there are certain streets that obviously are not covered by the bond measure. That's Grand, that's Oak Park, that's 4th Street, that's, I don't know, Farrell, or is it Pike Lane? So I would just say give staff that direction. I would think any streets that are not covered by the bond measure initially, would, you know, we may think about that. I think that's kind of a thought process, but I believe the comment about the intersection or the gateway barbers was a really good one, and then the street signs, the wayfinding signs, and then sidewalks. I think that's something we should talk about. And then I also wanted to get a clarification, because there was a discussion about regional projects, and it actually talked about bike and pedestrian safety connectivity. That's beyond the 50%, correct? So that would be more of a competitive pot, because we have talked about extending the boardwalk from Grand Avenue to Pier Avenue. We have talked about, and I think this is in either our bikeway plan or in the bike visibility plan that we put together. So,
well, there's a couple of things with that. One, there's a section in the plan for a 15% that goes for bike and pedestrian. There's some regional projects that are mentioned there, but there will also be competitive bid possibilities for jurisdictions to add projects. In your own 50%, you can also choose to do some there as well. You might even do a combination of the two, where you get some that's from the regional from the regional bike, and some that's your local allocation. So there are really multiple ways of working that out to your favor.
Yeah, so my suggestion would be that we take the boardwalk that goes from Pismo to Grover now, that we're talking about extending to Oceano, and to me that's a regional network. That's not something we should be asked to spend our if this goes through, if it's put on the ballot, and if the voters agree with it, I think we need to find a way to get that put in that part as a regional project.
I'm sure the bike folks would say, too, right?
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so review and comment on the draft transportation investment plan. Have we all made comments and the distributions? Everyone comfortable with what's presented? Okay. And I think we're all in agreement with the 9-year sunset clause or duration. And then safeguards. And then I guess the key project. So I talked about some projects. I don't know if we're all in agreement on that, and that's just some direction, because I think staff, you've probably already had some conversations with Mr. DeCarli and his staff in using the CIP to kind of identify some of those projects. But I do believe the ones we talked about tonight would be new to that discussion, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but I like your idea of making sure that the CIP program is part of that discussion.
Yeah, and I think Kendall had said they had discussed that as a base, but I'm pretty sure we had not put the Oak Park Grand Gateway in there, the street signs and wayfinding signs, and then sidewalks. We'll have to kind of figure out what that looks like.
A slightly tongue-in-cheek question.
Yes.
Is I don't see anywhere in here where undergrounding of utility lines would be a possibility.
Now, that's interesting you brought that up, because I thought for sure Miriam was going to bring that in when she brought up the sidewalks.
I didn't even know that was on the table. Thanks,
I don't think it's on the table.
I'm not saying it's on the table, but in the other communities that have gone this way, if there is coordination for roadway improvements and you can coordinate those at the same time with your utility providers, you know, your cost obviously is much different. But there's the little matter of getting the utility providers to play and put everything underneath. But yeah, if you're tearing up the streets one way, that's one of the reasons why some of these bike and pedestrian pieces go along with local roadways, because you're doing the same thing at the same time. So yes, but you're going to have to fight that one out with the utilities.
I thought Miriam was going to ask the question earlier. That's why I figured I'd ask it now.
Jeff's going to get that pole out of my driveway somehow. Thanks, Jeff.
I think as you put enhancements, and maybe that's a general description, because even if you have the funds, the company that does it it's many years down the road. And we'll leave it at that. Okay.
Oh, actually, can I ask one actual additional question? Realizing that it's sunset, and I think I may know the answer, but I'll let Ms. Flint possibly answer this. Realizing that if it did go forward, it did get approved, the 9-year collection of funds would sunset. So is there a time limit on use of those funds?
It depends on the way the ordinance is written, but just as an example, it's something that the staff has talked about. What if you funded a regional project, but it's not completed at the end of the 9 years? Yeah. The funds are still set aside and committed to that project, so they would continue to move on. But so it's like if you haven't spent it by then, you don't lose it. They're still allocated to those projects, and then the Citizen Advisory Committee would continue to oversee the expenditure of those funds.
Okay.
And just one question on your direction.
Sure.
So we'll see this list of projects again before it's finalized. Is that true, or is this the only I just wonder about the wording and how general or specific it's going to be. That's
okay.
All.
Yes, there will be time. We will be finalizing that at our board meeting in June. So we have time to work with your staff and clarify these points.
Okay. And then maybe there's just a quick update on those or something at a meeting.
Absolutely.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't think there's any official resolution, just direction, correct? Great. Thank you, Mr. DeCarli, Kendall, and the team for being here, and everyone who brought up really good points. So let's go ahead and move on to... We don't have any pooled consent agenda items. So let's see what else we have here. Council committee reports. Karen, you have anything?
I do not.
Do we have agenda item 12 covered?
That's after.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I'm so excited.
I still got control of this. Karen, you have anything?
No, I do not.
Oh, very good.
I know.
Mr. Lee?
Nope, I have no committees.
What?
Reports either.
We are moving. Barbara Nichols?
No. I have, let's see, RAC meetings passed. South County Transit is next month. And CAPSLO is next Thursday.
Okay. Ms. Shaw.
The only meeting I had was City Manager Copsey and I updating the chamber on what we've all done, so I don't need to update you on that.
Okay, very good. So as for me, the slow card committee report was given. I do have a South Slow County Sanitation District Board meeting on Wednesday, and one of the things that we have done is reached agreement with a full-time district administrator. His name is Gerhard Hubner, and we expect to finalize his contract. And he, I believe, is actually starting work this week. So, and then I'll give you a much more thorough report after that. And then as far as Five Cities Fire Authority, I will be participating in two strategic planning sessions on Wednesday and Thursday, and it's really to identify a five-year strategic plan, and I will give you a report after that's done. So we'll be taking a look at what where we are with the JA, where we're looking to go in the future. So that'll be part of that. And then I think separate of that, we will be bringing the JA agreement. There's some amendments that the board is suggesting that we look at, and we'll be bringing that to you probably in May sometime. So stay tuned. Any council communications? Miriam?
A few weeks ago, John and I met with Monica Grant, the CEO of the YMCA. I was just seeing if she'd be interested in hosting some programs in Grover Beach, and she brought up the fact that they are actually in the process of looking to possibly build other facilities in different areas, and that Grover Beach may be a good fit for its own independent Y facility at some point. So they're early in the process. But the first step is that they're having a study throughout the county just on how they should expand and where they should expand and possibly somewhere in Paso and possibly Grover Beach. So the whole survey costs $35,000, and she would like a contribution of around $2,500 for our part of the survey. So I wondered if that's something we'd like to agendize and possibly vote on or discuss.
So, yeah, just an opportunity for us to be part of their survey. So I think that's just really the question is, do we want to do that? Is there value? And so what does everyone think?
Would that be, from a timing standpoint, would that be something we include in the budget, or would it need to be done before that?
Well, it's a pretty quick timeline. She said our Y board will be reviewing the proposals and approving going forward with the survey on April 21st.
Nice.
Okay.
So I emailed her back asking that same question, and she's out of the office. So.
Okay.
So we aren't going to get a decision before April 21st.
Right.
And so maybe perhaps we can have a discussion on the first meeting in May, if that's agreeable with everyone.
Yes.
I don't know if it needs to be anything significant other than to vet it and make a decision. Anything? As far as timing of the draft budget and whatnot?
Well, there's a couple ways. If they need a decision on the funding by the 21st, I don't think we can do that. So
nope.
The funding is out unless it's something retro there. And we can, you know, definitely talk with Monica on that. We can definitely get it on the May 2nd meeting as far as a discussion item on whether how or should the city participate in that study and how that would work from the YMCA. As far as being part of the budget process, it can, you know, for future funding, that's something that we can definitely discuss during the budget times in early June.
Very good. Thank you.
Everyone, is there consensus to do that?
Yes.
Okay, I think we're good. All right. Any other council communications?
I do.
Okay,
well,
Karen?
I just want to remind everybody that it's cleanup week. So put your stuff out.
Put your stuff out
trash.
Tomorrow.
Take out the trash.
Tomorrow.
Yep.
Okay. Anything on my right? I think we're good.
Yep. Just and actually, I'll announce it again that both you and I are walking a mile in her shoes on April 30th. So I'm looking forward to getting a nice, comfortable pair of shoes to walk that mile in. April 30th in Mission Plaza. And then just a preamble to that, the Grover Grange does a pancake breakfast the first Sunday of every month. So we don't have a meeting between now and the first Sunday. So from 8 to 11:30 at the Grange on 13th Street, they do pancake breakfast. So,
and they are really good.
They are really good. Yes, yes, indeed.
Okay. Barbara, do you have anything? You good?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. City Manager, item 12. This was fun. This will be fun.
Yeah. So thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. The city is required to report employee hours worked to the IRS on an annual basis. The IRS considers the elected officials, the mayor and the city council, are in fact classified as employees, and thus the city must also report their work hours once a year. Because of this, we are asking the mayor and council members to document their work hours on an enclosed elected, the sample timesheet that we've enclosed there. We're hoping to do a colored sheet that we place in your council binder at each meeting for the previous 2 weeks, and the reason there's three sections, because in case there's a three-week break, to be filled out. The expectation is that each member will check the appropriate work hour box for that week and sign the form and leave the form with your packets. We'll make it as simple as possible. The date for the specific week will be listed on there. It won't be blank,
okay.
So you know what date it is. You won't have to fill that in. and we'll start next time, and then it will be for the whole week, not each day. So it'll be I estimated I work no hours or 30 hours or whatever it is, and initial it. And then we'll gather those sheets up, and that way staff will be able to report correctly to the IRS. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Yeah.
I'll jump in.
Okay.
What about the travel time and all the board meetings that we are assigned to? Is that included?
Absolutely. Any time that you spent doing city business is included as work time.
So people call you on the phone?
If there's minimal, if somebody calls you a two-minute call, you can track it if you want, but it's really a de minimis amount of time for employee purposes that those at home are not necessarily considered time worked, at least for our employees. But for you, it's a general, that's why we kind of put general hours. It doesn't have to be super specific. It's just a general amount of hours that are placed during the week.
Okay, good.
I was just going to ask also, is this something that's absolutely new, or are we just catching up with it?
So both. We are catching up. It's something that should have been done last year, and we did not do. Last year was a grace period. We actually should have started in January. Hopefully we will not get penalized, but we will be properly reporting these to the IRS.
Tell them we're volunteers.
Yeah, we tried that.
You tried that? Nice. Anything come out of that?
Is this just because I said at the last meeting I like not keeping time?
Is this the whole conspiracy thing?
Because I said that I like not having.
Sometimes you might want to have that thought and just hold it. Don't put it out there.
Just to be clear, in other words, this isn't like billable hours from a lawyer. it's basically we are trying to get compliance with the requirement that we report the hours that are spent by counsel on the job. I think we're just trying to meet the requirement. So your best estimates on these are, I wouldn't spend a lot of time trying to keep a sheet with, you know, every phone call or a general representation of what you think you worked that week. We'll do.
Sounds good, yeah. So you're not going to get a raise based on time this timekeeping. So. All right. Thanks, City Manager.
Thank you.
Let's see. City Attorney, any reports or comments?
Nothing tonight. Thank you, Mayor.
And can you cover our closed session while you have the mic?
Absolutely. Honorable Mayor, Council members, it's the intent of the Council to meet in closed session on one item tonight, and that is negotiations with labor negotiators, conference with labor negotiators pertaining to unrepresented employee groups, executive management, Grover Beach Police Management and Confidential Employees Association, and management and confidential employees.
Very good. And with that, we're going to recess in a closed session.
Hopefully this will be quick.
Yeah. Okay.